Hi, it's Randy here, and you're about to hear an interview that I didn't think would ever happen, which is me talking to the two creators of Terriers, Sean Ryan and Ted Griffin. As you guys know, I'm a huge fan of the show, and this was just a dream come true to get to interview these guys. When I went to do the interview, they first couldn't find Ted or Sean, and I thought it wasn't going to happen. But Ted showed up, I started talking to him, and then a few minutes in, Sean Ryan showed up. So just for clarity's sake, I will put a little audio insert when Sean shows up and clarify for you guys that I'm now talking to both of them. Here's the Terriers interview. The sound quality might be a little shaky because I was recording in the Press Lounge, which is actually a restaurant. You might hear some background music, some audio from other interviews going around, people just wandering around. Hopefully it all is clear enough. Sorry about the sound quality, but I hope that you guys enjoy the interview as much as I enjoyed doing it.
I rewatched the pilot last night of Terriers just to kind of refresh. That is a damn near perfect pilot.
I should have done that.
So I've noticed in looking through your what you've done that you seem to have a fondness for heists and con men and detective stories, which I absolutely share. So what are some of your favorite stories or creators in general in that genre?
Well, I grew up watching The Sting a lot.
Okay.
That was a comfort food movie. If there was, for television, it was MASH and Twilight Zone and Get Smart, but movies were The Sting, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, yeah. Which is also an influence on Terriers.
Sure, yeah.
A rather obscure movie that you can see on Turner Classic Movies occasionally called Big Hand for the Little Lady.
Okay.
Which you should check out, read as little as possible. It's a slender Gossamer film, but it's great fun. And then a little later on, certainly David Mamet plays in Men and so forth. But I don't think, but it was really probably the Sting was the thing that really molded the interest as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think as I was beginning to work on Ocean's 11, I read a lot of Damon Runyon stories, which are sort of about hoods. I read the Big Con by, and I'm going to forget his name, but it's the book that informed a lot of what David S. Ward wrote in The Sting. So those were, and I think I talked to a couple of Bunko cops, but mostly I've been interested in sort of the fanciful pretend world of con artistry and heisting,
sure.
As opposed to the actual,
the more real grifters, beaten with oranges, and unless I'm wrong, you're not doing a ton of TV writing these days, right?
No, Terriers has been it to date, although the thing that really got me into television was The Shield. That was the first show that I went completely gaga for and binged, and that was when there were only two or three seasons in.
Yeah.
And because I did that, then I basically found Sean Ryan's number and called him and said, can I please hang out in your writer's room and see how this is done?
Yeah.
And so I did that for season five, ended up co-writing an episode with Chick Egley, which was a blast, and got to had sort of a big fan moment of hanging out on set for the week. Which Michael Chiklis directed that episode. And then when that was all done, Sean still liked me. And so he said, why don't we do a TV show? And I said, I have zero ideas, but I really like the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And that's what I think kicked off.
So that actually leads me to one of the questions I have, which was that there was that in the 70s, there was a sort of sunbaked detective genre like Travis McGee and Rockford Files and all that. Was that in any way an influence on you? Were you a fan of those back in the day?
Probably Rockford, yes, because I grew up a block away from Stephen Cannell.
Okay.
He had a much nicer house than we did, so he was on a much nicer block, but
sure.
We were a block away.
Okay.
And my brother was in his son's class, and it was at the time that he was doing Rockford, so there was sort of like, I didn't know who was President of the United States, maybe, but I knew who James Garner was.
Sure.
But as far as, I don't think I discovered Travis McGee until later on. I like a lot of early detective fiction, like Hammett, specifically. James Ellroy has been a big influence over the last 20 years.
So this is where Sean Ryan joins the conversation. He mostly lets Ted Griffin do the talking, as this is very much Ted's show, but you will hear me talking to Sean Ryan and Ted Griffin from this point.
Okay. So nice to meet you. Randy Lander.
How are you doing?
I'm so sorry.
No worries.
We're talking about television, which is a medium.
Yes.
Okay. I've decided and branded it a cold medium. Or is it wait? Which is Marshall McLuhan's?
It's a medium because it's rarely done well. Or rarely well done.
Oh, rarely. Okay.
Which isn't true anymore, if it ever was. So we live in a world where Full House, X-Files, Gilmore Girls, all those kind of things have gotten revivals. I would like to know who I have to kidnap to get a terrorist revival, and if you have their address and any security concerns I might even know about.
Well, my guess is it's somebody in the Fox family, I would guess, is who we need to kidnap.
is it Landgraf or Bert Salke?
No, it's probably Bert Salke more than Landgraf. Ted and I were just talking last week about this, because I think we're open to doing something additional with the show, but we'd have to untangle some business sides of it. We'd have to make sure that Donal and Mikey were free and willing and amenable, and most importantly, Ted would really have to feel like he had the story
we would have to come up with a good idea.
Do you think you could go back to it after all these years? I read the interview with Seth Moll that you did where you sort of talked about season two and even like, oh, we might have done this in season three. So are those interviews still ideas still percolating?
I don't think we would do those because of how much time has passed.
Sure.
But I think it was a particularly joyful experience because of everybody we were working with. Everybody got along. I don't want to speak for other people, but for me it was the best time I ever had doing a show, most as far as the pleasure of the company of others, as well as just the pleasure of creatively feeling satisfied. So I think we would all seek that experience again. We just got to make sure we're not doing it to sort of hang out, that we're...
We have
a really good
sure.
reason, and I guess I'm sort of intrigued in doing something, maybe not a whole other season, but Gilmore Girls just did sort of basically what it is, four
sure.
90-minute movies, and while that, just saying it out loud, sounds like a lot of work. one movie would be...
Don't talk yourself out of it while I'm sitting here. My heart couldn't take it. What was your partnership like on the show? I know that you directed an episode of Mad Dogs.
Yes.
And do you guys have any plans to collaborate again in the future?
Yes.
Three questions.
Well, it's sort of, I think, it's in the ether, but I would not know. We have nothing to announce.
Sure, yeah.
Except our engagement.
I'd love to work with Ted again. I always check in with him. I would say at least once a year. To just say, hey, Ted, what's going on? Are you interested in doing something? You know, the partnership on the show, Ted was really the voice of that show, the guy who I certainly deferred to in terms of having the final decision on what stories we were going to tell and what the dialogue would look like. I just wanted to be in a support position for him because it's always hard to make a TV show and he'd never done it before. So I would help, I think, a lot behind the scenes. I would work a lot in the editing room. I would write some drafts, some of which he told me sucked and some of which he told me were pretty good.
We had to throw out my first pilot and start from scratch, so it wasn't everybody's work gets thrown out at some point.
Sure.
Well, it was such a difficult show. It was a difficult show to write for those of us who don't live inside Ted Griffin's head. It took a little while. I think that the stuff that I wrote best, I think, came later. The stuff that I tried to write earlier wasn't in line because I just hadn't figured it out yet. We got canceled just as I was starting to think that I was figuring it out. From a writing perspective, I always felt very comfortable in the editing room on that show.
Sean is actually came up with so many sort of brilliant fixes in post. I want to give him credit for that, and also both on Terrors and on Mad Dogs is a really excellent producer, which is a tough, besides being an excellent writer, which I've tried to do, and I'm a rather lousy producer as far as playing sort of blocker and protecting the vision, which he also did with Chris Cole on Mad Dogs, and getting things to the starting gate and beyond. So there's my back rub for Sean, but it's true. this show wouldn't have reached the air without his efforts. And And while I'm still speaking, which I have a tendency to do, we should bring up Tim Minear's name, because the show wouldn't have survived to the finale and wouldn't be what it is without Tim.
Tim was someone I brought in who I'd always admired. I'd worked with a long time ago on Angel, and he was above me and was a mentor to me on that show, and I had a gut feel that he would really plug into the show, and he did, and Ted's right that Tim was really a hugely important member of the team.
Yeah, Tim Minear's been on the name on a lot of shows I've loved, so I'd forgotten his involvement, actually, so good that you brought him up.
And, well, we almost broke, it was Chicago Cove was his last one-season show, but because now he's been on American Horror Story for 4 or 5 seasons, which is his first show he's ever been on, which wasn't canceled after a season.
I wanted to ask, we were talking a little bit before Sean got here about your early days, and so you went and worked in the writer's room of The Wire, or The Shield, rather, or did you went and shadowed? Tell me the story.
I called up Sean as a fan,
right.
Talked my way into the writer's room on season 5,
okay.
Sort of as a guest writer, and I co-wrote an episode with Chick Egley, but I sort of watched how sort of television
was made.
You kind
of never left.
And then I never left.
You didn't have an official position, but you go to set and Ted was there.
I would show up a lot, mostly because of free food, and because of the romantic, glamorous locations. But I also co-opted a lot of Sean's friends. Jay Carnes is now a friend. Walton Goggins.
Whatever happened to that guy?
Walton Goggins.
He's never worked much anymore.
Never heard from him again. He's okay. He'll bounce back.
So, Sean, I'm curious from your point of view, I know that Ted. So what was your first impression of Ted, and when did you figure out, I want to work with this guy?
Well, I've been a huge fan of Ocean's 11,
sure.
And then I also watched Matchstick Men, which doesn't get as much attention as Ocean's 11, but I think maybe, you know, as good if not better in many ways. It's a really impressive movie, and very, very clever from a writing standpoint. It was unusual. I mean, I knew that there were people who were fans of The Shield, but it was very unusual for someone of Ted's stature to sort of call me up and essentially, you know, be interested in like a freelance position on the show just because they wanted to do it. You know, the size of the paychecks he could get in the feature world sort of far dwarfed, you know, what we'd pay for the time he'd have to put in and the money we could pay on that. So knowing that there was somebody of such talent who was interested in a labor of love and just being part of the family, of course, was intriguing. And also, by that point, you know, we'd had a lot of the writers who'd been on the show. We hadn't had much writer turnover at all between, like, seasons 3, 4, and 5. It was really the heyday. We had, you know, Glenn Mazur and Kurt Snyder and Scott Rosenbaum and Liz Craft and Sarah Fain and Anne Fierro and Chick Egley. And I would think I'd even hired a new writer that year because everybody was great and everybody was sticking around. So to have a new voice, you're always looking for some kind of new voice to come in and help you look at the show in a different way. And Ted's mind is really unique, and his point of view is different than anyone else I've encountered with. And so you'd be stupid not to, you know, take it as a gift that he wanted to spend time with us and talk about the show and write on the show.
It allows me to take a responsibility for a lot of the major decisions in the rest of The Shield, which I have nothing to do with. But I can say, you know, what happened to Lem, that was mine.
In the 6 years since Terry's been on the air, there's been a lot of changes in TV, obviously. I looked at the Americans ratings, which I love the Americans, but their ratings are really comparable to where Terry's was. And I just wonder if you guys think, if in today's fractured market, do you think that Terry's would have gone on, or...
Are they that low?
I don't know if they're that low, but they might be low.
I was comparing season 1 to current season.
What I would say is... you know, one of the nice things about kind of being someplace first is you get there first. But you know, but the Beatles weren't the first band to sort of make that kind of music. They just did it the best. And the Shield, you know, I think the Shield could have been an even bigger hit if it came out later. But you know, we had to sort of plow the ground for a couple of years to get people to accept the idea that basic cable TV could be good. Similarly, I think Terriers is the kind of show that if it come out 2 or 3 years later, I think it may have had a different fate, in that I think word of mouth, you know, Twitter, Facebook, which both were in use but weren't the things that they are now. And I think there would have been a little bit more patience, and if that show could have been on Netflix like the summer after it aired and allowed people to catch up on it, and we'd been given a season two, I don't think it would ever have been a Walking Dead sized hit, and we still had to overcome, you know, a confusing title and a confusing marketing campaign.
Not my bad.
But I think it may have been different. I've read in the press how well Terriers does on Netflix, and there are different ways that different shows can survive and thrive in today's TV. And back then there was only one, which is sell enough commercials on the night that you air. And Terriers wasn't good at that.
Right.
In 2010. But I think that there would have been other outlets or other ways to monetize it that a show that good could have survived and went on. But you know,
did we even have like +3 ratings back then?
No.
I can't remember looking at that. And that's only 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's changed really dramatically in the last few years. Okay, so this is probably my last question. So every character in the show really looms large in my memory, big and small. So how do you create distinctive characters like Hank's sister, Britt's ex-partner, Maggie, all those, and make them so instantly compelling? What is it that like hooks a character so quickly?
Luck. I think my other glib answer, but it's more honest, is work.
Yeah.
You write one version of it, and then you keep peeling the onion and trying to figure out. And then luck comes in, because if you land Donal, then Hank takes on dimensions that Donal brings to him, and then we start writing to, which are far more complex than what we originally had in mind. So, which is the fun thing about television, is you sort of create something and then you can actually build on what works, as opposed to a movie where it's sort of like first draft is what you got, like you shoot it, that's it.
Sure.
You don't get to try again. So, and that's why I prefer every episode to the pilot in a way. let's put it another way. I really appreciate that the show gets better as it goes along.
Sure.
And deeper and more complex.
I would add to that, I mean, he referenced it, but casting is a really not unappreciated, but I would say underappreciated aspect to what showrunners do. You can have the most interesting character on the page, and if you don't have the right actor to come along, I mean, you referenced Hank's sister, and that's actually Donald's sister, Karina, who had worked for me as an actress on other shows of mine before, and brought an unbelievable amount. You know, Britt's old partner, that was Maximilian, I believe, Maximilian Hernandez, I think is his name, who's a working actor now in great stuff, and he was a great actor then. And Mikey is someone who's kind of so charismatic and so interesting to watch, that if you don't bring someone into the show that has some real presence and weight with what they say, it's not going to seem like an old partner. And I was really impressed with Max in that episode. And, you know, you have to have the right casting directors, you have to have the right sides to interest really good actors, and then you've got to have the wisdom to cast the right people.
Yeah.
And then you've got to have, you know, the right directors to help, you know, sculpt those performances, and then you've got to have the right editors to finalize those performances. It really is a group effort, and any weak link in the chain screws it up for you.
Right. All right, guys. Thank you very much. I really appreciate
taking
the time.
Thank you.